Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Sports Bros Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything BYU sports. Now here are your hosts, Andy Karchner, a.k.a. Big Bro, and Aaron Karchner, a.k.a. Little Bro.
That's right, it's time for your Sports Bros Podcast. You'll have to apologize, we aren't going to be quite as upbeat as normal, but I am Andy, a.k.a. Big Bro, joined by a little bro, Aaron Karchner. What's up, Aaron?
I always thought that we held the title of the downer BYU fan, so I actually think we're going to be right on schedule for how we typically do this, and it is going to be a little more dramatically negative today, considering the epic meltdown that happened yesterday.
Yeah, it's tough. Of course, we'll be getting to that. Thanks for joining us. Follow the conversation on Twitter. @SportsBros is our handle. Our online home is tornbysports.com. You can, of course, if you don't catch the whole thing, download it on iTunes, Stitcher, or just about anywhere you get your podcasts. Of course, the big story is BYU's 8th straight loss to the red team up north. Aaron, like, I'm just going to say it. Like, I didn't even want to do this podcast tonight. I'll tell you, like, I process a lot in writing, right? So, like, I spew everything on Twitter. But last night at, I don't know, midnight, 11 o'clock, whatever, our dad called me, and I had to just, like, reject the call, and I texted him, and I just said, I just can't right now, Dad. I'm just not in a good place right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I was at a friend's house, and there's a few of us over there watching, and right when Matt Bushman didn't make it to the first round, I left. I just got up and left. I barely even said goodbye. I was just like, I'm gone. This is ridiculous. It's, you know, this streak has held so, or has done so many things to BYU fans, and one of them has, I think it's desensitized us to losing to Utah. Maybe some more than others, but last night was special for BYU. It was a special collapse. I mean, I have literally, and we were very cautious on Twitter to not get overhyped and to start talking trash and to do any of that, because BYU's had no room to talk trash. Even up 20-0, you're 6-5 and lost seven straight. I mean, like, you know, until the fat lady sings, stop, you know, don't do anything. Yeah. And obviously last night was a perfect example of that. And it is hard to really grasp at the, I don't even know proper terminology for the collapse, the meltdown, the throwing in the towel. I mean, I don't know what other words to use from the pathetic second half performance of that team. It was bad on all accounts.
It's like this team has no idea how to put together a full game. I mean, except Wisconsin, BYU has not played four good quarters against any team all year. Like, it's really true. Arizona was like a third quarter, and that was it. You know what I mean? Wisconsin was a full game. I guess they played full games against Hawaii and whoever it was they played last week. But,
New Mexico State.
New Mexico State. Even New Mexico State, right? They started out slow. I guess it's just they don't know how to put together four good quarters. And I mean, this, you know what I kind of compared it to was, it was the reverse Las Vegas Bowl, right? Where Las Vegas Bowl, BYU spotted 35 points right out, or whatever it was, right out of the gate to Utah, literally in five straight turnovers to open the game. This is the opposite, where BYU got spotted 20 points and then melted down. They just don't know how to put together a complete game. And I get it, the team is young, but it's frustrating to see missed opportunities. I mean, so many missed opportunities this entire season. I mean, when you talk about losses to NIU, Boise State, Cal, all coming within a touchdown, and all basically coming from a stalled offense.
Yeah.
You know, there's three or four wins where you just go, all you got to do is pull your head out of your you know what, and you win this game. But they just can't do it, right? Missed opportunities have been the name of the game. Really, all three of Kalani Sitake's season. We all remember his intro season being the famous almost every single game coming down to the wire. And, you know, something like four out of the five losses Kalani ended up having all coming down to the wire. That just it marks his entire tenure so far of missed opportunities. He drops to 10 and 18 in games decided by a touchdown or less.
It's interesting because here you are, you know, here he is 38 games into his head coaching tenure, okay, and you have 28 of those 38. So what's that percentage? 68%, whatever, something like that, you know, high 60s, right? And are in one score games, and you would think you would learn how to make those adjustments and to make the play or to make a play, you know, whether it be an early in the game or late in the game. I mean, as of right now, BYU is, I mean, even with the Utah game, BYU is literally two plays away right now from being 8-4. You have the Boise State final play of the game if they make that, and then that one tackle pass against NIU for whatever reason, if they actually throw into the end zone and score, they win that game. I mean, so they're literally two plays away from 8-4. And then, you know, one could argue, you know, a handful of plays against Utah, a handful of plays against, maybe Cal or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Cal, I mean, and we've discussed this before, Cal was kind of a smoke and mirrors thing because they scored with like 30 seconds left or whatever it was. So,
yeah,
but either way,
true,
it's
but
not a game that I feel like they were ever, it was ever out of control. Like, you know, it wasn't Washington where after it was 21-0. It wasn't that kind of thing.
If I remember correctly, I think BYU led at the half against Cal, or at least was tied or something like that. It's not like they were blown out by Cal. You're right. I mean, the score ended up being a 3-point game, and I think that's a little bit, you know, not indicative. No, Cal was up 7-3 at halftime. And at the end of the third quarter, it was 10-14, right? So, I mean, yeah, it didn't feel like BYU had anything going, but that was because BYU didn't score an offensive touchdown until the last minute of the game.
Yeah.
That's my point.
And that's my point, though, is like Kalani's had 3 years of, I mean, what again, 28 out of 38. Let's do some live math here, okay? 28 divided by 38. That's 73% of his games that he has coached in are one-score games. That's insane. Three out of four games are one score games. How have you not figured it out now? And like, how are you not coaching your quarterback to throw the ball right, you know, against Boise State, catch and throw? How are you not trusting your quarterback who gets you into the lead against Utah with it, and then you take away his arm and take away his legs in the second half against Utah? Like, these are just things that you're just kind of like, everybody's like, oh, they need more time to learn. They need more time to gel. Kalani so far is the constant in 3 years. And in no way am I at this current point saying his job is on the line. And maybe we'll get to that later. But the point is 10 and 18 and out of your 73% of your games and you've only are one score games and you don't seem to be learning. And I think, and I'm not going to break down each of those 28 games, but I would argue that 10 to 15 of those games are lost because of poor coaching decisions or coaching methods or time management, something that can be directly correlated to a coaching mistake as opposed to a player just, you know, trying to fight for the extra yard and fumbles. That's a player issue kind of thing. You know, there's a lot of things that are easily chalked up to coaching issues, and whether it's Kalani, whether it's Jeff Grimes, Ty Detmer, Tuiaki, whatever you want to say, that's concerning to me. And last night was a perfect example of that. I mean, as we continue on our just overall analysis of the game, we'll break down players and specific moments. In my opinion, there were two moments in this game. You know, there's honestly like three or four moments when you just felt it drain. And,
yeah, before you get to that, Aaron, I want to kind of just give Kalani, because I'm pretty harsh on Kalani, because I agree. When we talk about 3 years in, he's had several starting quarterbacks, to say the least. He's had two offensive coordinators, and it has been a constant struggle, especially without Taysom there to kind of make something out of nothing. It's been a constant struggle to move the ball, you know. But on the other side of that coin is when 73% of your games are close, it shows that Kalani doesn't get blown out very often, right?
Sure.
We of course, have the LSU debacle and the Wisconsin debacle from 2017. You know, there's a handful of those kind of plows where they did just get annihilated. But to his credit, his teams don't give up, and his teams keep it close. That being said, I will say some of these games, you talk about them being close. You know, like I said, not really that close. You talk about Utah 2016. Utah last year ended up closer than I think it really was. West Virginia, a couple of those games are kind of, well, was that really
UCLA,
close?
UCLA.
Yeah, UCLA, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. Still, the point remains, he doesn't get blown out very often. A handful of times, but not very often. So that's to his credit, but still. When you're well under 500 in close games, it's a problem, and he is the thread that, you know, he's the common denominator, and we've been saying so. You got to start asking, but Aaron, when you take this Utah loss to Utah, where does it rank in terms of gut punches in the last 8 straight losses?
I think it's the worst, and I don't even think it's close.
And I agree.
It's because Greg Rubel actually tweeted out a really great recap of this streak, and BYU's kind of collapses, whether they had a lead late, whether they had an opportunity to win. But, you know, BYU's always been in games to and had opportunities to win this game in the minus one game, which was the 54-10, right? But the funny thing is they were up 10-7 when that started happening. So another collapse, I mean, collapse, if you will, but this one, there's, it's not even close. This is the uppercut that just knocks out BYU fans, right? This is,
yeah.
It's the 8th round, if you will. Let's go sports metaphors here. This is the 8th round KO to a BYU fan where he's like, dude, if I'm up 27-7 with 3 minutes in the third quarter and can't beat you,
yeah.
How can I? The only way to start doing is start cheating, right? Like, and BYU's not going to do that. Well, at least not BYU football. Like, it's just, I mean, there's no way to – I mean, if you can – I don't even think there's an argument for the other 7 to be more gut-wrenching because BYU – I have not seen BYU dominate a team under Kalani Sitake and a good team at that. I mean, okay, UMass is Mexico State's whatever. Like, I have not seen BYU play a more dominant half of football on both sides of the ball than they did in the first half last night. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean – But then it starts off amazing, and then you miss a PAT. I'm not going to lie. Right when that happened, my gut just turned over, and I was like, that's going to be a play in the game that is going to destroy this. Now, it kind of came down to being moot, but it didn't because it kind of had to change philosophies. Utah had to do – anyways, so it was – in my opinion, it's a knockout blow that I just don't see the end in sight. I see a lot of positives, and we'll get to that later, but I know where does it rank for you, Andy?
It's definitely the worst, but I don't think it's as hands down. I mean, there's really kind of something to be said for 54-10. I mean, you know, like Jay keeps picking up the ball and trying to throw it and like getting into the end zone. You know what I mean? Like just the whole kind of silliness of 54-10 has a different type of gut punch. That's the gut punch of, oh my gosh, that team is so much better. This game was just the Max Hall curse is real. Like between this game and the Las Vegas Bowl, those are the times where I just said, like, I'm not a superstitious guy, right? But there is something in the football gods that just won't allow BYU to win this game. You know, a lot of the close games, and I think some Utes had tweeted this out, and I think they have a point. A lot of the close games were kind of Utah playing a lot of prevent defense in the fourth quarter and running the ball a lot in the second half and just kind of like, you know what I mean? Doing what BYU did, but successfully. And you know, giving BYU a chance to kind of have a couple late fourth quarter drives. You know, you talk about a couple years ago, the 3 extra point attempts, you know, where technically they would have tied the game or technically
field goal. They were not extra points.
Field goals, you know, the 3 times rushing the field, blah, blah, blah. You kind of go, well, I mean, like, did anybody like at that point where they're setting up for like a 45-yard field goal or whatever, is anyone sitting there going, oh my gosh, BYU could do this. No, I'm going, well, of course they're not going to do it. I mean, you just never really feel like it's actually going to happen. So this one felt bad because you're watching the first half and you're going, I'm going to experience this. Like, this is going to happen. Like, this is going to happen the first time since my son couldn't even walk, you know, and he just turned 10. And you just kind of – but you tweeted out, you're right, Aaron, that when that pick six happened, you just go, everyone thought, oh, this is what was supposed to happen. Like, this is the game we came to see, you know. And I was, like, somewhat encouraged – and I'm kind of going off on a tangent. The answer is, yes, this is the biggest gut punch for me. But anyways, just a little play-by-play here before we go to a break. You know, that pick six happens and you go, okay, it's finally going to just happen. But then BYU got the ball on the next drive and went down and scored a touchdown.
They responded.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also thought, they went down and scored a touchdown and then Utah came back and scored a touchdown, but it was like a 6-minute drive or something like that. Right. Like they were doing a lot of running, a lot of passing over the middle. They were taking their time between hikes. And I go, okay, I can live with a two-score game when you bleed that much clock, you know what I mean? And that was kind of the way I felt after that. But then it was just we'll talk about it in a minute, but that I kept on hope after the pick six, even though I think you thought you didn't. But it was not pretty, to say the least, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the pick six, and we'll talk about this after the break. The pick six was the game-changing moment for multiple reasons, and that's when I stopped rooting really hard.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll break down who is the MVP, who is to blame, and looking forward, is there a little bit of optimism to be had for BYU fans when we come back?
Hi, this is Jared Hallgren with St. George Mobile Massage.
And this is Rachel Hallgren. Which son says his better half?
After running a mobile massage business for 7 years in Southwest Washington State, my wife and I moved down here to create the premier mobile massage business for Southern Utah.
It's been an exciting experience meeting all our new clients here in Southern Utah. So head on over to St. George Mobile Massage on Facebook and check us out and give us a call today.
We're back. This is the Sports Bros Podcast. I'm Andy. This is Aaron. We are, of course, talking about the Holy War 2018, the saddest moment of BYU fandom, which is saying something because there are many a sad moment, which, by the way, we haven't even talked about it, came on the same day as BYU lost to the Houston Cougars on the hardwood, right? So it was just another one of those weekends.
Hey, this was not a good day for BYU sports. And then the women's volleyball in the week lost their unbeaten right after our podcast earlier.
Yeah, it was actually
on Tuesday, was it?
Yeah, it was right during our podcast. They got swept. I mean, that volleyball team losing McKenna Miller is completely different. I mean, McKenna Miller is a dominant player. I'm still surprised they got swept, their first sweep in like 3 years. It's just sad because that committee, I think, was just waiting for a reason to – you know, bump BYU down. They had a low RPI. They've kind of been like reluctantly number one during the season because everyone hates the WCC. But anyhow, back to football. We got to talk about this, Aaron. So, I mean, there were a lot of players that stepped up, but we have to talk about this, Aaron. Corbin Kafusi. I mean, it almost felt like Brett Favre coming out of retirement or something. You know what I mean? Because it was like, I don't know. It was something like an hour before the game. I saw Greg Rubel and Jay Drew tweeting saying Corbin Kafusi decided to play, you know, and everyone's going, what in the heck? And then to be honest, Aaron, I thought, okay, he's going to play, but he's going to be all banged up. It's not going to be the same. Dude,
impact
dominated.
Player.
I mean, that guy is so impactful. It's unbelievable. And him going down changed that defense like 180. I mean, that dude was impacting almost every single play.
There were three injuries and one play that literally changed the tone and, in my opinion, the score and outcome of this game. Let's go to the play, and I think it's a universal play that everybody agrees on. The pick six changed the game. And I know BYU went and responded. We teased this a little bit before the break. BYU went down and responded, but that got the crowd into it because BYU's defense was dominating at that point. Utah's offense couldn't do jack diddly before that point. That was their first score. The crowd finally had something to cheer about, and right when Rice-Eccles Stadium started to get loud was when I was like, this game is over. The second moment happened when Matt Hadley, who up to that point was the MVP of the game, and it's not because he was lighting up the statistics, which were manageably well. I mean, he had
ran for over 100 yards in the first half, man. That's insane.
I mean, he had 60 yards rushing and he had 11 yards out of the backfield. But I mean, his vision, his physical running, he never went down on contact. His first downs, his pass protection. Matt Hadley had the game of his life yesterday. So when the pick six happened and when Matt Hadley went down, the offense changed. Because those are your two offensive tone setters right there. A pick six, and then Zach Wilson's trust from the coaches, in my opinion, went completely out the window. And then Matt Hadley, now your running game, you're down to your 19th string running back who they don't trust either. Okay, and then you go on the defensive side, and I swear within a series or two, Corbin goes down after having a monster game. He still finished the game with the second most tackles at 7 tackles for the team. But then Isaiah Kafusi also going down was an enormous loss, and that's when the game was just completely not going to happen for BYU.
Yeah, Isaiah really has come up to be a star on this defense, and I think his future is bright. So many players to talk about. Of course, like you said, Matt Hadley, insane. Before we talk about Matt Bushman, which I think just merits a lot of discussion, Dion Gonoloku had his fingerprints everywhere in this game. Whether he
I don't
was
know how he continues to get punt fumbles. I don't know how he does it. It's
the
insane.
Dude is, I mean, he is a Kai Nakua-esque ball hawk on special teams, but man, he blows up plays in the backfield. I mean, like we saw a couple really big tackles on some of those screen plays that Utah tried to run. He had the WWE type throwdown when what's his name tried to hurdle him. He grabbed the dude by like hips and legs in the air and like body slammed him. He was breaking up passes over the middle. His fingerprints were all over this game. He is going to be an NFL safety. There is no doubt in my mind about that. He might be, other than Corbin Kafusi, the most impactful team on the defense, player on the defense. And he was all over, from pass breakups to muff fumble recoveries to tackles in the backfield. I really love seeing him. But Aaron, like, you were making comparisons for Matt Bushman to Saint Johnny Harling, and right? I mean, like, just the body types, right? Very reminiscent.
Very similar. Very similar.
But, holy cow, that was so fun to watch him play.
It was. It was fun to watch him play because he was getting targets and he was getting the ball. He has been so, and it's not necessarily to his fault, but he just hasn't been getting the targets. Matt Bushman needs 6 to 9 targets a game. Yes, 6 to 9 targets, and if you're going to throw it 28 to 30, he needs a third of those targets because he's their best receiver, and it's honestly not close. And he showed you yesterday why that was. That one-handed catch over a defender was exactly what Johnny Harling did in the first play of the 2006 game, and he did it multiple times throughout the game.
Yeah.
So Matt Bushman was obviously an enormous impact, and everybody knew it. And for some reason this year, he ended the season with, what was it, 23 receptions, which over the course of the season is like 1.5 to 2 catches a game, which is stupid, and 2 touchdowns. Like, he needs 40 catches and 6 touchdowns next year for BYU to be successful, especially against their schedule.
He's another NFL prospect. And don't overlook, and I've heard rumblings that some of the reason he's having trouble is he's not great at blocking. But if you remember the Zach Wilson, like 35-yard run or whatever, the seal block by Matt Bushman is what made that happen. But of course that one-handed catch, oh my gosh, he has the it factor when you talk about receivers. And what he brings to this offense is something that I haven't really seen since maybe Cody Hoffman was here. And that is someone for a BYU quarterback to just say, you know what,
when I'm not sure what to do. I just need to know where he is on the field. And we saw that dangerously a couple of times where Zach Wilson just kind of hucked it to him in double or triple coverage. And somehow the balls didn't get tipped up, or they got tipped up but didn't get intercepted. So that kind of makes your heart race. But at the same time, that's something that's been missing from this BYU offense for the last very, very long time, really. It's something that helps a young quarterback. It's something that helped Riley Nelson, not a young quarterback, helped Riley Nelson immensely. Riley Nelson did not have a whole lot of talent, in my opinion, but he knew how to do two things. One, he knew how to scramble and keep a play alive, and two, he knew how to find where Cody Hoffman was. And that's a huge asset, especially in college football, where the difference between one athlete and another, especially in size, but also in athleticism and skill, can be so great, even against a good team like Utah. You know what I mean? Like, Bushman against that cornerback or linebacker or whoever it was that he jumped over to catch that, they didn't have a chance. You know, and using those matchups are so important. So that is a huge, huge asset going in for who I think the last main impact player that, of course, we haven't talked about, but is obvious, is Zach Wilson. Aaron, let me just like remind everybody that Zach Wilson was 20 for 29 for 204 yards. Doesn't sound great, but it is. 20 for 29 with two touchdowns and an interception against his home team, right? I mean, the team he wanted to play for. This Zach Wilson showed up big time against Boise State, his former commit, and Utah, his dream school. I mean, the dude has kind of this weird combination of Taysom Hill and Max Hall, right? Where it's like he's got Taysom's legs and abilities to kind of make plays, which is the name of the game in college football. And like Max Hall's gunslinger, just confidence. He throws the prettiest ball I've seen at BYU, maybe since Max Hall. Maybe even prettier than Max Hall. He's a cool combination of the two. And if you don't think that he used a little bit of extra motivation in the Boise State game and in the Utah game, then I don't even know what to tell you. Because the dude, I mean, I'm not saying he's like Hall of Famer or anything, but the dude has the skills and he has the mental fortitude, which is, I think, the biggest thing that BYU's been missing. I love Tanner, but he didn't have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we will talk a lot about Zach Wilson, obviously in the coming years, but also in the coming podcast. Another thing about Zach Wilson is he was the leading rusher in the game for both teams yesterday with 14 carries for 73 yards. And it would have been like 90-something if it wasn't for the three or four sacks, because in college football they take out those in the rushing stats. And that's where and I thought he picked his times to run. There wasn't very many designed runs. His long run was a designed run, but most of his were his scrambling ability, his ability just to get out of pressure, which for the most part, I thought BYU's line actually played significantly better than you could have expected against a fantastic defensive line. It wasn't until the second half that the defensive line of Utah really started to assert themselves, and Zach was a big part of that. His ability to escape and his ability to get the ball out in good places. Zach played a phenomenal game. Now, his pick six was obviously a ginormous momentum shifter.
Yeah.
But BYU was up 20-0 because of Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
BYU went up 27-7 because of Zach Wilson. And BYU lost 35-27 because of the lack of Zach Wilson. And that, I think, needs to be go right into our segue, Andy, of what is the issue or what was the issue of last night's collapse? Like, where can you pinpoint it and who, why, what, where, when, whatever, what happened and who to blame?
So there it's tempting to try to pin it on one thing, but there are – I'll just list them. One – I mean, Utah woke up. Utah's the better team. Did anybody really think Utah wasn't the better team going in? So Utah woke up and finally came to play. Utah is a second-half team. They always have been. They were behind NIU in the first half this year. They even were behind Weber State in the first quarter. You know, they are a slow-start team. So Utah woke up. Utah's crowd got into it, and that team feeds off that amazing –
That crowd is hard to beat.
Yeah, 56 or 57 straight sellout or whatever it is. Not that it's hard to sell out a tiny little stadium like that, but
shots fired.
Man, we don't have many shots to fire. I got to take them when I can. So the team waking up, the crowd waking up, the Kafusi's going down was
monumental.
I you can't overstate it. I mean, the Kafusi's going down was humongous, and then I think you can't overstate the pick six or. And this is what I think we're going to spend a lot of time in, and that's the play calling. I mean, you immediately saw that they were playing not to lose and that it was a lot of really conservative play calling, which honestly is defensible for two reasons. One, like you're up big, you want to bleed clock. And if the first half was an indication, the running game was working. You know what I mean? Like, and I'll say
110 rushing at halftime.
Right, exactly. 110 rushing yards at Utah – at halftime was insane. And so I'm not going to pile on Jeff Grimes for at least the first two or three drives coming out and saying, hey, we're going to just keep on trying to do that. But once the run got stuffed, and especially once Matt Hadley went down, like Riley Byrne ain't coming in and saving anybody, guys. Like, I'm sorry. I know he has like a fan club online and I like him too. I don't have anything like terrible to say about him, but I mean, you know, Jamal Williams, he is not. You know, he's not going to come in here and do that. And he obviously couldn't. So, anyhow, it's defensible. Like, trying to bleed the clock and keep establishing the run that had been established is defensible. It's just when you get down to third and one and you throw a pass, like, not even like a quick pass. It was like a 8-yard out or something like that. I'm going – what? And then you hand it off to Riley Byrne up the gut on fourth and one against a Utah defense. Like, I didn't see a single rollout of Zach Wilson. The only times he really made it out to the edge was when he was scrambling. I only saw one or two jet sweeps, which I was happy to see. But, you know, I get it. Utah's a fast defense. You're not going to really outrun them on the edge. But, you know, at a certain point in the game, you go, this is not going well. So when Matt Hadley went down, that's where I thought they really should have put more on Zach Wilson. But like I said, all those things, Hadley going down, Kafusi going down, Utah waking up, the crowd getting into the game, like all those things played to make a perfect storm. It wasn't just one thing.
You're not wrong. Like, it was definitely a perfect storm, but I think BYU added to the perfect storm. It wasn't a lot of things. I mean, a lot of those things are out of control, right? Injuries happen. That's football, right? Now, it just so happened to be three of your best players in that specific game happened to go down. So that's obviously just a freak anomaly. But the one thing you could control was your play calling and your use of personnel. And Zach Wilson just has the ability to use his legs and not only his arm.
Yeah.
He only threw 13 passes in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And BYU only gained seven. I think they only gained like 110, 120 yards in the second half. They had 110 rushing in the first half and like 130 throwing in the first half. And they ended with 153 and 204. Zach Wilson, I think, in this opinion, I don't have anything to substantiate this claim. But I think after that pick six, I think the coaches lost trust in him, which is
bullcrap.
I think complete bogus. And I think you like you said, it's kind of defensible. You kind of understand the mentality, but you also need to look at who it is, right? If this is Tanner Mangum, yes, I think you need to do that. But this is Zach Wilson, who's shown the ability to come back, who's shown he just has kind of a moxie about him. Now, in fairness, he's also 0-3 in game-winning drives or game-tying drives. But he's young, right? He's a freshman. You're hoping that – and this will happen later in future podcasts I'm already starting to think about. But to not call any more RPOs for him, any more read options, which the read option, by the way, is what gave him 31 yards, to not give him any rollouts, to not use his legs, like you said, give me some rollouts, give me some play action bootlegs, give me something to get him in space, I thought was a just complete ineptitude of the offensive staff to just completely make Zach Wilson a pocket passer, which he is very good at. But then, like you said, Utah woke up. Utah started bringing pressure. Utah's four down linemen just were able to start getting pressure. And so I think that combination of Utah waking up and then the staff, whoever you want to put it on, Grimes, A-Rod, Kalani, any combination of that, for whatever reason, kind of not using Zach Wilson's skill set to the best of their ability, especially on that third and one and fourth and one. Third and one, I'm okay with a pass. I mean, I don't love it, but if you're going to run up the gut with your 19th string running back, do it on third and one. And
why,
then fourth and one, you need to have some kind of bootleg or something. That sequence, to me, was a complete lack of trust in Zach Wilson and a complete rookie mistake by Jeff Grimes. You don't run up the middle against Utah on third down or fourth down and one in game momentum shifting drives and plays. You just don't do that.
Does BYU not have a quarterback sneak like in their playbook? I mean, third and one right there. And they had kind of done that several times. They'd hiked the ball quickly while Utah was still getting lined up, which I like in a hurry up offense, especially against an amazing defense like Utah has. That's what I was seeing there. I go, just line up right under center. But not only was it a pass, it was a shotgun pass in third and one, you know, where it's like, why are you going backwards? Like, go that way. It was
that is obviously the moment that I think a lot of people can remember the sequence of plays. But just overall, the second half, I thought they took the ball out of Zach Wilson's hands. He's the guy who got you there. He's the guy that's going to need to bring you to the promised land. And that's not just beating Utah. That's beating NIU. That's beating Boise State. They took the ball out of his hands in this particular case. Zach Wilson needs to make plays. Let him get on the edge. And, I mean, I was really impressed yesterday with his ability to find the sticks and know where the first down was. Now, he took a lot of hits yesterday that I didn't like seeing, but it was getting first downs. You know,
yeah. But he slid a lot too.
He did a lot of bogus spots on those as well. But at the same
time,
I just think they just took the ball out of his hands, and because they went into prevent mode, in my opinion, that's a huge causation of BYU continuing to just throughout the game just throw it away.
Yeah, I get being conservative, but I mean, it just like reminded me of the last drive against Boise State, where it's just kind of like handoff, which again I kind of get, but it literally the very next drive after the pick six was three straight handoffs to Matt Hadley up the gut and then a punt, right? And it's frustrating, and you look at that and you go, how many losses did the coaching staff hand this team by not trusting Zach Wilson?
Yep.
So anyhow, we got to go to break. When we come back, we are going to talk about our Twitter poll question. We'll talk about BYU, you know, should we be as fans be optimistic about it next year? And we will talk a little bit about BYU's bowl prospects when we come back.
Have you ever been sitting at home saying, I'm sore, I'm tired, I would love a massage right now, I just don't want to get in my car and go anywhere? Well, you are in luck. This is Jared Hallgren with St. George Mobile Massage. Check out my 50-plus 5-star reviews on Facebook and message me today. St. George Mobile Massage, where the professional massage comes to you.
Welcome back to the Sports Bros Podcast, brought to you by St. George Mobile Massage, where the professional massage comes to you. Seriously, call Jared. He will come to your house if you're in Southern Oregon. I'm sorry, Southern Utah. I'm in Southern Oregon. He's the best out there, so give him a call. Okay, Aaron, as we wrap up our thoughts about the Holy War, I want to move now to our poll question, which I completely admit was thrown out there at a time which will get a completely biased response. So take it with a grain of salt. But was 2018 season a success for BYU football? I mean, I get it. It was a quote-unquote tough schedule this year. But 6-6, I mean, like, is that a success?
I don't want to give too much away for what we'll do as a season review show next week, but yes and no, and I think that's what everybody's going to say. And I'm going to go on kind of off the radar of what we've said, and I think what we saw from freshmen this year, whether freshmen that are going to redshirt or freshmen that obviously like Zach Wilson who are going to be impact players in the program for a few years, I think – getting freshmen the time that they did and being able to go to a bowl game with playing, I mean, what was it that I saw the other day? Like 9 freshmen have started on both sides of the ball or something like that. Or maybe it was 11. And to play that much fresh, that many freshmen and go to a bowl game, I think you have to kind of say that there's some form of success. But if you just want to do it on the whole, and I know we've talked about this pretty much every week now, that you don't think this so much as success. But I think if you look at it from that perspective, there is some form of success there.
Okay, so BYU fans, I think I posted this, like, I don't know, 20 minutes after the game was over. So we have got, I mean, it's less than 24 hours old, and we have over almost 450 votes. 72% say no is not a success. Obviously, going 0-3 against your rivals, tough to call that season a success, right?
True.
Going 6-6, I mean, there was a time when having a non-winning season was unthinkable. Like, obviously, Lavelle's last year took the last win against Utah to go 6-6, but that was an anomaly. When Gary Croton had the first losing season in whatever it was, like 28 years or something like that at the time, it was widely viewed in the fan base as heresy. You know what I mean? And I get it. The schedules were easier, blah, 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 blah. But still, I mean, like, those benchmarks should still, like, in some form be there. You know, so it's just tough. And the other thing to me is, like, I hate comparing it to last year. Because think about it. Let's say you are the vice president of sales at a company, right? So you inherit a company that in your first year, the year before, they had, I don't know, $2 million in sales. Your first year, you get $2 million in sales. And then your second year, you get $500,000 in sales, right? And, of course, everyone's really upset. And then in your third year, you get $750,000 in sales. Like, in the private sector kind of business market, you're not going to get pats on the back for improving on something that you're responsible for trashing, right? Like, I just have a hard time being like, good job, Kalani. You went from 8 wins a season to 4 wins a season, and now I'm going to pat you on the back for getting 6 wins in a season? Like, no. You're the one who brought it down to 4. You would have been fired if you were a vice president of sales and you improved barely, right? So I get it. They're at a bowl game. Like, they don't have a losing season yet, right? I mean, it's – I just don't see a whole lot of indicators of success other than, I guess, we don't suck as much as we did last year. Because, look, there are two games that improved from last year. One is the Wisconsin win, and one is the UMass win, right? Like, if our marker of progress is not losing at home to UMass, I mean, I know it was on the road this year, but last year was at home. Is that progress? Is that where we are as a program? You know what I mean? So I just can't. I don't care. I mean, like, they're going to end up in some, like, fourth place AAC bowl. You know what I mean? Like, and if they win that and go 7-6, am I going to really change my mind? No. And I'm being consistent. I said this last week. Last week on this podcast, if BYU loses to Utah, it's not a success. I can't do it.
Yeah, I think again, I'm just taking a different route and not really focusing on this year. I'm looking at it from an optimistic view of next season. And next season is going to be brutal, you know? I mean, they've got a tough home schedule next year. Like,
ooh, yeah.
It's, you know, like I said at the beginning of this year, that BYU should become bowl eligible just off their home schedule. Ironically, that did not prove prophetic. It was quite the opposite, actually. But
well, BYU needed that win on the road at Wisconsin just to get bowl eligible. You know what I mean?
Because they would be because of how pathetic they were at home.
Yeah.
But so I see, as much as we have criticized, and I believe rightfully so, hence the criticism, the coaching staff, the youth on this team and the playmakers, Matt Bushman's back, Zach Wilson's back, Lopini Katoa's back, Talon Shumway's back, Gunnar Romney's back, you know, Dallin Holker's back. The playmakers on offense, the entire offensive line minus one is back. And the offensive line, albeit not great, continuity on the offensive line is really great. And so to have them all back plus minus one is really a good thing. So basically your entire offensive unit that has improved, albeit not to what we want and what I think was there, they had the ability for, improved from last year, they're all returning for next year. That's something to be optimistic about. I mean, this is a game – yesterday against Utah was something to be optimistic about. The game against Wisconsin, something to be optimistic about. These are two hostile environments against notoriously great defenses and defensive lines in particular that BYU played extremely well against. Now, obviously, the consistency factor is what is infuriating, particularly against Utah. But when you have these kind of performance in this kind of season, it's a young team and poor coaching. And I think poor coaching, especially on the offensive side, has shown from experience. Grimes this year has gone from brilliant to idiotic to absolute mastery to you need to be fired and you need your credentials need to be taken in the next drive. And I think that happened with Ty Detmer, right? That's a youth thing. And it's infuriating and rightfully so. And I think they deserve every amount of criticism that they get. But they're all young and hopefully you see them improve. We haven't seen Kalani and the staff improve and as we talked earlier in the short or in the situations that are close games, but you hope to see those kinds of improvements. And this young team with all these playmakers with significant amount of time played, Lopini, Gunner, I mean, all these guys have games. I love this 4-game redshirt rule. I think Gunner might even be able to redshirt because of some of his injury issues. These are things to be optimistic about BYU next year. Now, I know we have a bowl game still to finish, but there's optimism to be had. It's gut-wrenching as yesterday's loss was, and it was, and it will ring until BYU plays them. By the way, next year is the 100th meeting between the schools, at least according to Utah.
According to Utah, yeah.
So, you know, like, there's optimism to be had. Zach, it's so hard to not be optimistic about Zach Wilson. He has everything you think of a BYU quarterback. I mean, he's got the Jim McMahon moxie and pride.
Steve Young's legs.
And, you know, Steve Young's legs. He's got the, in my opinion, and, you know, I'm only 30 years old, and so I didn't grow up in the Steve Young era and stuff like that. Not that Steve Young was a great thrower by any means, but his throwing motion and everything is just one of the, I mean, it's prettier motion than Max Hall's. It's, you know, John Beck's was a little bit sidearm. It's just a pretty throw. I mean, Jake Heaps was the last guy who I can think mechanically had the best looking throw. So it's hard to not get excited. There's optimism to be had. It's just in the moment, 24 hours after the, it's not even 24 hours after. It's hard to see that, but it's there. And I know that's going off character for us sports bros, but I'm optimistic for next season since we have to start looking there.
There are two things that I think need to improve drastically between next year and this year for the potential of this young team. Because I agree, Katoa, Riley Burt, Zach Wilson, Gunnar Romney, Matt Bushman, I mean, weapons, they're there to be had. There are two things that need to happen between this year and next year to realize that potential. Number one is Jeff Grimes needs to figure it out. He needs to get some consistency in his play calling. And in my opinion, just, and I think it'll happen because next year you don't have the kind of freshman thing going, hanging over Zach's head anymore. Let him air it out. Let him be him. Let him be more Max Hall style, right? If he's going to throw 5 interceptions in a game, like, so be it. You know, like, you're on mute. I would rather lose a game after Zach Wilson throws 5 interceptions than lose the game after Jeff Grimes has 18-3 and outs because he's just handing it off.
Right. Well,
off tackle every single
in that 5 interception game, he might also provide 3 or 4 touchdowns. It's just, that's the gunslinger mentality.
Yeah,
that is
exactly.
The Brett Favre thing, right? Brett Favre has, well, he did have the most touchdowns of everybody, but he also had the most interceptions.
Yeah,
because,
he did.
You know, to make money, you got to take risks, right? That's just how it goes. And if you take the ball out of his hands, like Grimes has done, and you don't trust him to make a throw or the throw or multiple throws, I mean, you just kill any kid's confidence. Now, Zach doesn't seem like a guy whose confidence is going to get killed quickly, but still, like, we have reason to believe that Zach has been pretty pessimistic of Jeff Grimes' play calling this season. Like, we have reason to believe that that's directly from Zach's mouth. So it's not just us saying this. Like,
so,
Grimes needs to give the ball and trust him to make plays for this team.
And I'm hopeful, right? Like, I've been very critical of Grimes, but I'm hopeful that in the offseason he'll kind of put it together. This is his first OC job, so I give him a little bit of rope. So that's the number one thing. Number two, this offensive line needs to be consistent, needs to be dominant. This offensive philosophy requires an established run and requires time for Zach Wilson, which, by the way, really quick side note, even though he's a runner, He is an incredibly comfortable pocket passer. He steps up. His first instinct is to step up. And a couple of his sacks last night were from him stepping up instead of kind of running around the edge
out.
Like you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And I love it. Anyways, that's a side note. So two things. This young talent cannot reach its potential without a good offensive line and a good offensive play caller. So this offseason, that is going to be – and honestly, I wonder if Pugh has a job next year because of how inconsistent this offensive line has been, and he is kind of a first-time offensive line coach. I get it. He's kind of he's been tutored by Jeff Grimes in his young career, but those two things, if they don't happen, then all this talent will go to waste. It just will. So I am very cautiously optimistic about this. Aaron, are you optimistic about BYU's bowl prospects? I mean, there's talk about the Pac-12 not having enough teams, and so like whatever the Cheez-It Bowl or whatever, BYU sneaking in there. We'll of course break this down when the announcement comes, I think next week, but you know, are you excited or is it just me personally? I'm expecting some like third place AAC or, you know, like second place, third place Mountain West team or something like that, to be honest.
Excited is hard to – it's hard to get excited. I think if they would have won yesterday, I think their bowl prospects would have been a little bit better. But with the loss, I think you're – like you said, yeah, playing a Middle Tennessee in the First Responders Bowl or something like that.
I don't think it really matters anymore because I think at this point it's just a matter of ESPN. Like wherever they can fit them in at this point, there's not going to be a ton. So I think it's just a matter of fitting them in somewhere more than
– yeah.
They're not going to the Alamo Bowl or something like that.
Well, yeah, they're never going to go to the Alamo Bowl because that's actually a really premier bowl.
That's what I'm saying.
The one thing that I love about them going to a bowl game is now they have another month to practice with this young team.
That's huge.
Especially the offense. You have so many young guys. Give them a whole another month to get together and to bond and to work on this scheme and whatever. That's huge. I the game itself, because I don't think it's going to be a marquee game, it's one that I think they should be favored to win, or they should win, considering some of the projections. We'll talk about it more once it comes out, but so I'm excited for that. And I mean, who's not excited to watch BYU play one more game? You know, I mean, now it's that, and then it's BYU basketball, right?
I'm really interested to see what the destination is because I haven't been to a bowl game in a long time, and I don't think it's in the cards this year. But if they end up on the West Coast, my wife might be listening in the other room, but I might try to make it, you know, and that's really big for BYU fans. If they end up at some bowl game in Florida or, you know, someplace out east, it might be a little bit difficult. But you start getting in the Texas and California bowls, then you're talking about a lot of BYU fans that, despite an, in my opinion, disappointing season, can make it out to it. So that's a fun thing for BYU, and it's one of the greatest things about independence is that they travel around a lot. So anyhow, we will talk about the bowls more next week when we have more information. I think it should be coming out in the next week. So thanks for joining us. It's a rough day, but thanks for grieving and processing with us tonight at the Sports Bros Podcast. We are here every week. I'm Andy. That's Aaron, Big Bro, Little Bro. We are online at SpornBySports.com. Our Twitter handle is at Sports Bros. Aaron, last word on Holy Week, Holy War Week.
Unleash Zach Wilson. I think it will pay dividends.
Free Zach. No kooks.